This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. A revolution is coming, a tech revolution. Of course, we've had many of those before in this country. Electricity, railroads, the internet all changed the way we live. Susan Crawford argues the next tech revolution will be just as dramatic. Fiber optic cable could allow us to connect at extremely fast speeds at exceptionally low cost. But, and there's always a but, getting everyone connected with fiber is not going to be easy, especially when you consider who is standing in the way. Susan Crawford's a Harvard Law professor and the author of Fiber, The Coming Tech Revolution and Why America Might Miss It. And she joins me now. Welcome, Susan.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Good to have you here. Let's talk about this because fiber is here, right? I mean, we have fiber optic cable. People are being connected with high-speed internet. It's already here, is it not?
Well, you're in the Triangle. The Triangle's been really lucky. Lots of people have showed up to actually fight over you to provide you with fiber optic internet access. Outside of cities in North Carolina and actually in places in the Triad, they don't have what you've got in the Triangle. A lot of people in the state are struggling along with either crappy DSL or wireless connections. And the pattern for the country as a whole, according to Microsoft, is that only about half of Americans are actually using the internet at anything approaching modern speeds as defined by the FCC. And that's those speeds, the FCC speeds, are just 25 megabits per second download, where people in Asian countries and Northern Europe are routinely going to have gigabit per second symmetrical service from fiber.
Right, that sounds like a giant market waiting to be served. Why are not the capitalist corporations of America seizing the opportunity?
Well, because we completely deregulated this sector starting in 2004 and left to its own devices, when it comes to expensive infrastructure projects like these, private markets' incentives really don't align necessarily with the public good. Their incentives are to divide markets. So you take Minneapolis, I'll take Sacramento. We've seen that with the cable companies across the metro areas of the United States. And serve the richest people with very expensive services that they're paying through the nose for. And then leave out a lot of the country, relegating them to state support. It's sort of like your minimum wage discussion, actually. And then just hang on to the status quo. And that's what we've seen with high-speed internet access in America. We don't have a plan to have this upgrade to fiber optic connections in what people call the last mile. We don't really have a strategy. There is lots of fiber running between cities in the United States. Google and Facebook often build their own. And certainly there's fiber running underneath the oceans between the U.S. and other continents. The bottleneck, and it is severe, is in the very last bit of the network that touches your home. And there, these private providers who aren't either subject to either oversight or competition have no particular incentive to upgrade. And so we are at grave risk of missing out, particularly in a world where China plans to have 80% of their homes wired for fiber optic.
Yeah, so we need to underscore this because what we're sold is that deregulation is the answer to capitalism. Please, government, get off my back and let the markets do their will and America will be much better, much faster, and much better served. That's what we're told over and over again. What you're saying is when government gets out of the picture, we end up with monopolies and far worse service. But I want you to, if I characterized what you're saying correctly, tell us precisely how that works. Why does getting the government off our back mean more monopoly, less competition, and ultimately worse service?
Look, it's just sensible. These are not bad companies. There's nothing malign about them. But their investors are looking for very fast returns on any investment, and they're trying to keep that investment as low as possible. That's just rational. And in that context, competition is ruinous because then you'll be fighting with each other and you're you know, subscription prices will inevitably go down. So you want to avoid that. And the best way to do that is to be big and then divide up territories. We saw this with the railroads in the United States. We saw it with electricity. In the, 20s, there were just a handful of companies and very large trusts providing electricity to 85% of the country. And they were doing it at whatever prices they wanted to command. And they had divided up territories so that they could, exclusively serve them. North Carolina led the way in sort of the progressive revolution of saying that actually electricity is a utility, should be publicly overseen, and should be at a basic level for anybody moving into a house. They have to have a certain level of electricity there. We just can't imagine life without it. Well, we're in the same place we were with electricity in the 30s now with high-speed internet access, controlled completely by a handful of private companies, just five of them. And they've got the status quo, and it really is working well for them, but not well for the nation as a whole.
No, and you're saying that we need to see the internet and all of the other possibilities that come from high-speed internet as a public good and therefore regulated as a public utility. And Wilson, North Carolina is kind of a good example of how things can work if you let that happen, right?
Exactly. So beginning in 1971, totally lawful in North Carolina for any city to build its own a communications network. Wilson already had Spectrum there selling cable service, but they weren't happy with the level of service and the price and the customer service and everything else. And they're just very sensible people. So starting in 2008, they used their municipal electric utility there to as the sort of backbone for setting up a fiber optic network, reaching every home and business in Wilson. Really successful. And the people there loved it. They loved having all their money stay local. They loved the low rates. Wilson provides service to public housing units for $10 a month on top of their rent bill, and that changes people's lives. But the North Carolina, the state, the General Assembly, right because of the success of Wilson's network, passed a law in 2011 making it impossible for cities to do what Wilson has done. Now, very recently, in the last month, a new bill has been introduced, the Fiber NC Act, with very strong bipartisan support. It's HB 431. That would allow cities to at least build basic infrastructure and then lease it out for retail internet access service to be sold by others.
How would that compare with what we're seeing in Wilson now in terms of the effect and what you're talking about in terms of the real need in this country, that kind of a plan?
This is a terrific plan, the 431 plan, and it is, in fact, the plan that works in places like Stockholm, Seoul, and Tokyo. The limitation the legislature is putting in is that the city isn't allowed to have public providers be the internet service provider on top of that network.
I see.
And the risk with that is that if there are only a couple of private providers selling service over that basic infrastructure, that they then again divide markets and don't compete. But look, it's so much better than what has been in place in North Carolina to date, and it's got the strong support of all parts of the state, the North Carolina League of Municipalities behind it. This whole issue is thoroughly bipartisan.
Well, it was. But interestingly enough, when the Republicans controlled the legislature and had a veto-proof legislature, then Time Warner Cable wrote that legislation.
Yes, they did.
They wrote it for the legislature that preferred that major corporation over the people of Wilson and the rest. Right?
Yeah.
Meanwhile, they're cutting corporate taxes. So Time Warner is one of the big beneficiaries of a huge corporate tax cut. And then gets to write legislation that really favors it all over the state. But you're saying what this suggests, though, this bipartisan now effort to change things a little bit suggests that people are aware of this and are starting to knock at the doors of legislators, Republican and Democrat.
Absolutely. This is, and your very first segment was about the need for community voices. This is a progressive, grassroots, energetic movement across the country. There are 800 places in the United States that have built or are calling for their own fiber networks, and most of those places are in Republican areas. People really understand that in order to get their kids the education they need, to stay, to really work where they live rather than having to live where they work, to avoid congesting highways, to, you know, get the best possible health care, every policy issue that North Carolina cares about depends on having a resilient, world-class communications network, including, critically, climate change. As people have to move away from the coast, they'll need to go to high and dry and connected areas, and they will have to be fed with fiber.
Yeah, and let's talk about some of the potential and what it is we're losing, because to some extent, it's not just, you know, sort of being able to read the paper faster online, or download your games quicker. It has to do with what we can't even imagine, pushing whole industries that are now limited. In fact, you talk about in the book, kind of when Netscape was released, right, in 1995, how slow everything was and how slow Netscape had to keep it because there simply wasn't the bandwidth to provide for better graphics and faster downloads and that sort of thing, meaning whole industries were held in check because of how slow the internet was. Once things got faster, industries that we didn't even know that didn't even exist in 1995 came to life because of bigger bandwidth.
Exactly. And so here, it's hard to imagine. We're limited human beings. But imagine a pane of glass between you and anybody else. That's what this fiber connection would create. So eye contact becomes possible, real human presence, which means you can actually visit a doctor you know, for everything short of actual surgery, you can visit that doctor remotely and have a sense of being in their presence and being cared for. We waste so much money on medical care in America and hospitalization. We have no idea what we could be doing with these far higher capacity connections. Same thing with education. Right now, we think of distance education as kind of passively watching a Coursera course or maybe watching somebody else talk. What if you could actually be present in a classroom, feeling yourself to be part of that experience, able to raise your eyebrow and be called on? You know, it is hard for us to imagine what is yet to be developed based on these networks. But I'll tell you, China and Japan and South Korea and Singapore and Sweden, they've all decided that this is worth their policy chops to ensure that all of their citizens have this capacity.
Is there some kind of a cost to us if we made this a public policy? Is there some sort of hidden cost that we're not thinking about here?
Well, absolutely. We're effectively paying rent to about five companies, and it's Comcast, Spectrum, CenturyLink, AT&T, and Verizon. They are reaping enormous profits, and I don't fault them for that. It's because we haven't constrained them. At the same time, those rents are not being plowed back into what we need as a country. What's basic for us? What do we need to thrive? We saw electricity as that basic thing. Today, it should be a fiber connection, very close, if not touching, every home and business that we can then access with our advanced wireless and build the new industries. The new good jobs that North Carolina needs may very well be service jobs that can be dependent on the kindness and compassion of the North Carolina citizen. That empathy you can express over this connection makes possible new forms of employment and also advanced manufacturing that could replace the manufacturing textiles jobs that have left the state.
We talked about the way things were working and working well in Wilson, but you also went to Greensboro, and there was a contrast. Talk about what you found there.
You know, I don't want to slag Greensboro too much. It's a lovely place, but there was a kind of self-defeating feeling I got when I kept visiting and interviewing as many people as I could, that the city leaders were not going to do anything about the internet access situation that was cutting off all of their black populations, most cities in America, a pretty segregated place, and completely reliant on Time Warner, and not really having the courage. This is really about bravery. It's less a political question than a long-term planning question. And the leaders in Greensboro didn't have the courage to take this on. Lots of scrappy citizens writing about it, caring about it. But the activity you've seen in the Triangle came about because Coalition really joined together and made sure it happened, and the great universities really pushed that. Greensboro, that same energy doesn't exist, and it felt as if the place was sort of subsiding.
Is there a way in which competition, I mean, if we really had competitors in this market, would things work out then? Or is it totally impractical, like other utilities, to have, you know, multiple companies trying to string this wire and get your business?
Well, competition, you have to think about it a little bit differently. This is by nature a natural monopoly service. All I mean by that is that it is so expensive to put a wire to someone's house, it really doesn't make sense to have two. The way you create competition, and the way we've always done it in telecom for 100 years, is to have a wholesale, neutral, passive infrastructure in the ground, sort of like a street grid, you can think of it that way, over which retail providers compete. And that way, you get all the competition in the world, which is why when you flip open your laptop in Stockholm, you've got 15 or 16 choices and, you know, gigabit symmetric service for $25 a month. And service reaching everybody.
Are there states in this country that seem to have figured this out a little earlier than North Carolina?
Well, what's interesting is that, let's start with this. 26 states in the country limit or ban cities from doing anything about fiber. People are starting to relook at those limitations, just like North Carolina is relooking at its. And, for example, Arkansas just reversed the ban on cities working on this issue. And Vermont is looking at reversing its position on muni networks. But, you know, at scale, this really should be a federal policy issue. But several states are noticing that they are falling behind on their own capacity for their own citizens and are re-looking at what they've done and beginning to turn the ship around. I'd say that of all the states, California has been somewhat adventurous, and many muni networks are located there. My hometown of Santa Monica, California, has cheap business fiber that the city provides, and it's really transformed that place. California's doing well. The incumbents are doing better in the state legislatures. Often they're very good at blocking these local efforts. And look, my whole point by writing this book is to just shed light on the issue and say these local efforts, these scrappy cities, should be shaming the rest of the country into activity. And certainly we need, at the federal level, the leadership, like, as Representative Fisher said, FDR, someone like that, who sees that this is just stewardship. This is basic stuff. This is nuts and bolts. This is making sure that your people can lead thriving, decent, respectable lives. It's really very simple. It's a public work to make sure the fiber reaches everywhere. And then we'll have lots of competition on top from private ISPs.
Well, the people who are pushing those state legislatures where they are to make changes in their policies that had once mm-hmm. been dictated by the corporations, and once the folks realized what was happening to them, at least in some states, things began to change. Those people vote in federal elections as well. Is there any sign that there is attention being paid at that level?
Not yet. We have a lot of issues to look at as a country. The point about this one is that it's a bit invisible. People don't understand it. They sort of say, well, I've got internet access. I can watch Netflix. And that's like saying, well, I have one light bulb in my house. You know, that seems fine. That's electricity. And so there's a big public education job to do here. The mayors get it. So I spoke to the National League of Cities. Every mayor is excited about this and wants to see what they can do. But they need political cover. They need to ensure that they don't get defeated for their reelect because of saying something about fiber optic. And the national candidates need to get a clue that this should be a crucial issue in the 2020 election, just as in 1932, electricity was the number one domestic policy issue.
Susan Crawford is the author of Fiber, The Coming Tech Revolution and Why America Might Miss It. Susan, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you for listening to The State of Things. You can find out more at our website, stateofthings.org. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stacia.